Welcome to the GMBN podcast. So, bikes. Are they indeed all created equal? Or are some bikes perhaps more equal than others? We have Dale and Rob from Nukeproof to talk about bikes, the inception of Enduro, and how to make one of the most winningest rigs of recent years. Dale is part of the design team and Rob heads up the global marketing. Thank you for coming on.
No worries.
How are you getting on? Is everyone settled and ready to talk some tech?
Yeah, we'll try.
We'll hope so, yeah, totally. So, Nukeproof as a brand. Now, if we start with talking about what Nukeproof sort of, not what it means in a literal sense, mm-hmm. but what the brand represents. It kind of, how long has it been kicking about, Rob?
Originally 1990, it was originated over in Michigan, USA. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of carried around till, I think it was 2004. And then it kind of all wrapped up. And then Michael Cowan, our now boss, went out and bought the naming rights and brought it over to Northern Ireland, and it is what it is from today, from there, really.
Because I think when people think of Nukeproof, they straight away think of the Mega.
Yep.
The Mega, of course, being one of the kind of first all-out enduro races, yep. Certainly one of the things that helped start the conversation. To me, Nukeproof as a brand have this, you know, we spoke about it before, but quite a pragmatic kind of... Mm-hmm. I think sort of no-nonsense approach,
yep.
You know, and it's really kind of sort of refreshing in a way. In terms of designing the bike still, is that something, when you're kind of dreaming up the next itineration of whatever it's going to be, are you thinking there's like a core theme that makes a Nukeproof a Nukeproof?
I'm sort of thinking back, actually just talking the history back to the beginning when we actually made the very first Mega. We actually, at that point, we were just a bit selfish. We were just kind of mucking about trying to make a bike that would suit our needs, because at that point, we were pretty much riding about on downhill bikes. Mm. But, you know, with smaller chain rings and that sort of thing, and just to try and get up the hills. So we end up, you spend half your day walking and pushing and a bit of pedaling until your legs gave up, because even then, your biggest cassette was a 32 on the rear and that sort of thing. So then we came up with the very first Mega, and it was, you know, in those days, 66 was really slack. It was 2009, actually. So we basically made a downhill bike that was designed for pedaling up as well. So it just happens now that's called Enduro, really.
Yeah.
So.
But it's very interesting, isn't it? Because I think the Nukeproof was ahead of its time in some regards. I remember probably 2011, it was coming with a single ring setup.
Yeah,
you know, which was a production bike. That was pretty cool. I remember there being, working in a shop at the time that stocked them, a bit of pushback from consumers. Only comes the single ring? Are you crazy? And, you know, I remember being kind of called wimpy by my friends because I said that 36-36 wasn't low enough. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, that's a one-to-one ratio, mate. What else do you want? You know, it was a different breed. They also did that, what I thought was quite cool. They had the Mega TR, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Right, and saying that this was quite a few years ago now. And that's kind of a very common theme now. Maybe it's called Reactor or whatever, but that kind of really capable, you know, super cool trail bike. When you get these inputs, I mean, Rob, I imagine you're in a lot of conversations with the race team. You know, is it all really racer and rider feedback? Or, you know, do you find yourself potentially looking at what the Joneses are up to?
I think it's a mix, really, because of, I think as Dale alluded to, it seems... a fairly selfish brand in terms of Dale and Michael wanted to do this, so they kind of started on this project, and it was never designed to be a bike, and it ended up that way. The downhill bike came when the opportunity to sponsor the CRC team came along, and Nigel Page wanted to push a downhill program with Nukeproof because they're sponsored by the components. There's kind of a need there that we're trying to go with, and then design the bike for that velocity, which fits in with what the guys in-house are really looking for. So the TR is very, very suited to what the Northern Irish scene was of the time. And it's kind of evolved from there, really. A lot of it is your local environment affecting the equipment that you're making, rather than just making it for the sake of, because of the world says that you need this, that therefore you need to do that.
Because I think that it's funny how, you know, in terms of theme or in keeping with tone, that Chain Reaction team seems to be very always punching above its weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if in the World Cup days, well, when they were racing yeah. World Cup and downhill, it wasn't a big flashy motorhome pit. It was, you know, very functional mm-hmm. and what it needed to be. And they, you know, won World Cups.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, that adaptability probably, well, I imagine it lent itself when they said we want to put a bit more weight behind enduro. When Sam said he was going to race enduro, was it like, oh my God, this is perfect? Or was there a bit of apprehension from your end?
I think it's, again, it's, I mean, it's credit to what Nigel Page does, and the passion that he brings into it is the fact that that's what the team is. It's a very passionate group of individuals or group of people all together that they all get on really, really well. So I think everyone performs really well when they get on and they're in their nice environment. So Nigel puts on a really good environment for the guys to perform in. So whether they've got the flashiest pits or the most basic pits, yes. You don't race your pits down the hill.
It totally, yeah.
You race the bike and you race, it's the mental state of the riders. So I think Nigel and the rest of the team put on a really good platform for everyone to perform. They're comfortable, they feel happy in what they do, they don't feel the pressure from within. The only pressure they have is what they put on themselves. So I think from that side of things, it's credit to people understanding people
yeah.
and actually putting the platform on. And I think that flows into what we do and the way that they help us, really.
Yeah.
Because they represent New Proof the way it is, really. I think it's very much about the people that are in it, whether it's Dale, whether it's Michael, whether it's Enrique, our designer, that have all been there from the start, that have all influenced the way the brand's going. Which then makes my job a lot easier because I just have to tell
yeah, totally.
And help tell the people's
yes.
story.
Yeah,
because all the guys are brilliant and they've got a really good story in their own right that yeah. I think the normal riders out of the customer, our customers essentially, can associate with because they're just normal people
yeah.
in a very fortunate position doing what they do.
And Dale, when Sam made the announcement that he was going to ride enduro, I was dabbling initially before committing full time, was it a case of, oh, well, thank God he's already got the bike, or knowing that it was going to be raced at the highest level consistently by somebody that kind of redefined mountain biking, was it a bit of, oh my God, maybe we didn't expect this when we originally designed the bike? Was it just, no, it's good?
Yeah, well, I think the first time he said he's going to race a double EWS, we're like, well, hang on a minute, he's not an enduro guy, he's Sam Hill, he's a downhill racer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got flat pedal. You can't.
Yes, yeah,
you can't
yeah.
do this. So, yeah, and actually, I think that you know, that Mega hadn't been out that long as well. I think at that point. So, well, I personally was worried that it's not going to pedal that well. You know, it's you know, well, we wanted the whole design theme was that it would descend as well as you know pedal as well at descend and all that, but. My flip is going to be a real test. If he really flops at this, that bike's going to look. And then, right enough, he just flat pedals. He just stormed it again. We're like, everybody's blown away. We actually couldn't believe it.
And it's actually done a lot for enduro. I think it got a lot of credibility from yeah. Sam going over. And although obviously he's you know, had well three overall titles on the bounce, but him not immediately wiping the floor. You know, because everyone knew how talented he was, it kind of meant that, you know, before there was a lot of perhaps retired, I don't know it would be fair to say, but you'd when you're seeing someone that you know is absolutely amazing, not winning everything, suddenly it got a lot more respect garnered for the field, I think,
yeah,
which was really cool to see.
I think it took him a little while, because of him, JC, Nige, they all work as a really close team in sort of trying to get Sam to perform. And I think it took them a little while just to figure enduro out yes. as such. So their first race they did in 2015 would have been New Zealand, and Sam won the downhill stage there, and so that's what we'd expect him to be strong at, and he really liked that, the 2015 Mega. And then coming into the 2016 season, I think it was Ireland, he did his first race that year, then he came second, and I think the smile came that he'd kind of like, oh yeah, this is quite good, I quite enjoy the variety of what the stages offer.
Because was it 2014 or 2015 that he won the World Cup in France?
14.
So he does come off like high flying,
yeah.
You know, and I think everybody was happy to see him win the you know, flap. And I think it was Matt Simmons in second, so like a really feel good result. And then I think, you know, it's often these podcasts usually turn around to me admitting how wrong I was, but I was a bit like I'm a trail rider, so the enduro bike, the Mega, a bike I spend a lot of my time on.
Mm.
But I was a bit like, it's downhill,
mm.
you know. And obviously, he knew what he was talking about. But as a brand, you know, is it like, was Sam already involved with the feedback on the Mega, or did he not spend that much time on it? Because I've heard how, you know, he does a huge variety of racing, mm. and I think it was Doddy telling me that maybe some of the thoughts behind this new trail bike
mm.
was it's very adaptable, and if Sam wants to go race cross country, he does have the option to do that. Was he involved in the other bikes before he started racing them, or?
I think the original Mega, he kind of was riding that a lot because mm. of, I think in 2015, I'm right in saying they had a big bushfire which burned down a load of his downhill tracks.
Oh, wow.
In Australia, in Perth. So he got to ride a lot more of his enduro sort yes. of trails out there. So he was spending a lot more time on his enduro bike and just enjoyed riding that. Mm. And so I think the evolution of that side of things has come from there. And it was, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how it was.
Yeah.
Because from a design point of view, when I don't think there's ever been the criticism levelled of, you know, looks like a session at Nukeproof.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of convergence of design, you know, of the four bar, you know, that sort of thing. How does that make you feel as a designer? Are you worrying about the pitfalls of falling into a certain category, or are you just kind of, you know, that sort of like outside art of this is going to be my interpretation of the perfect enduro bike, and I don't care, you know, what other people's bikes look like. You know, how does that play in?
Yeah, well, there's a bit of running DNA, and you know, I suppose from the first Mega, the four bars set up, and we toyed with different layouts and stuff, but we were just happy enough with that sort of layout. Although we've tweaked it as we went, you know, originally it was on the top, you know, shot was top tube mounted, now it's mm. down tube mounted, and with that compromised water bottle position, but we weren't going to compromise the suspension performance for a water bottle at that point, but no, it's just evolved, and we've sort of stuck with that layout and we've tweaked it, so it's working pretty well now.
Because I've got to put my hands up again and say I am a water bottle guy through and through. I think water bottles are potentially the only standard we have in cycling, and I think, boy oh boy, let's hold on to that one. That is something that must be, you know, it's a compromise, like everything is, especially on an enduro yeah. bike. And if it's really important to you to have a water bottle, and oh my God, if I don't have one, the world's going to come apart around my ears, then you should probably buy a bike with a water bottle if it's that important to you. Mm. But you could say that there could be any number of design characteristics that could be like, if that is absolutely important, yeah. then that's what you should buy.
Mm.
When it does come to the water bottle, I mean, is that something, do you kind of take that on board, or do you just say, you know what, if you want a water bottle, then, you know, the reactor will take care of that? Is it something you even care about, or is it just
Well, we care a lot about it, and I think maybe, I suppose the current Mega started its form in 2015. I think the water bottle was less common then.
It was,
like,
yeah.
Like, but now it's a big deal.
But people would get laughed at back then. You got a water bottle, you loser!
It's all backpacks then. Like, it was, yeah. Even Sam Hill was racing with backpack the mm-hmm. first few years. Yeah, it is. Yes, big thing. Can't deny it. I think
that's why swap bibs have come around now, and you've got your stashable yes. bottles now.
Yeah.
It's just different,
but if we ever do put a water bottle in, it cannot in any way compromise the suspension. That's
yeah. Mm. That is the one.
That is it, yeah.
Because I think, you know, I guess there is a concern that people don't wholly understand how varied kinematics from bike to bike can be. And that shock didn't end up in that position just because, oh, that would do, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got some M5 bolts kicking about, guys. Yeah, you know, it was all, I imagine, painstakingly developed. Mm. Do you have, like, mule bikes and test bikes, or does it all look on kind of...
Well, we all simulated it first on sort of linkage design program. And then we obviously have our prototype mules and stuff mm-hmm. to confirm test riding. Yeah, so that's, you know, it's not, yeah, but like 1 millimetre movement in Linky's position makes a huge difference. Mm. It can make the bike go from working to not working
yeah.
at all.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And do you think it's important, you know, either, both of you, this question is, you know, is it the same? Do you have to be a good bike rider to be a good bike designer? You know, like the best football managers aren't often the best players.
Yeah, well, I think it helps.
It probably does help. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it definitely helps. It helps to know what's happening. You know, it's, and even looking at, you know, you can look at all the different graphs. You can compare, you know, levers, curves, and anti squat of all the other bikes in the market. Mm. But if you don't know how those other bikes in the market actually ride, then you don't know what you're looking at. It's just numbers. It's,
yeah.
So I think it definitely helps. You need to know. You need to, you know, ride your prototype bike and go,
yes,
oh yes, I'm glad I, you know, just that leverage rate or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's definitely important.
Yeah, I heard that Cervelo have these glasses, and I'm going somewhere with this. It sounds, it doesn't sound like it, but I will bring it back, where you can't, it obscures the bike from vision.
Mm-hmm.
And on a road bike, I think, you know, it's less in front of you, and, you know, it was relatively easy to do. And so they give testers these glasses and they can't see. Similarly, a friend of mine used to test for a Salomon skis.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to, once a year, get all their athletes and take all the shot top sheets off and buy a load of skis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one would know and be like, oh my God, those skis were bloody good. And it would turn out it would be, you know, Nordica or whoever. How much is, you know, how much do you think that the testing in bikes is compromised by the fact that mountain biking is, we always see the bike, you know, in terms of, like, you can know inside the shocks and stuff, obviously it's different. But for tyres, you can't do blind testing. For so many things, it's immediately obvious. Do you worry about that sort of thing? Or is it just you think that maybe the knowledge, the having the predefined knowledge isn't a negative thing?
Well, generally, if I ever get a chance, or when I do get a chance to ride somebody else's bike, I'll always go back. I'll say, yeah, I like the way that felt. Or, you know, small bump wasn't great, but the, you know, general, you know, rest of travel was good, or it felt very progressive. I'll go straight back, just back to the, you know, computer, and see if I can find or plot the points on that bike, and then compare what I've just felt to the leverage rates,
yes,
or the anti squat or anti rise and that sort of stuff. And those two, I kind of really kind of kick out of that, seeing if what I felt is what, you know, what I can see on paper.
Like when you then go and pass a bike to some of the race team guys, to be honest, yeah, there's an aesthetic thing, but they, you know, like you pass Sam Elliott, Keelan, those boys, the bike, they just want the best performing bike
that's
possible.
True. Yes.
And okay, if it looks weird, there's something mental there, but Sam will tell us if something's a millimeter out, or this is out, or this is out, no matter what it looks like.
Yes, true.
And all he wants is the best tool to do his job.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where, between what Dale and those guys do in-house and what we have as the external with the team, as a development team, help, because of those guys want performance. So between the two of us, everyone's looking for the right sort of thing to produce the best product that we can do, really.
Yeah, I suppose it must be also really a real asset to have a team that is not only, obviously, like many teams, great riders, great personality, well-learned, but also having a winning team.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I imagine there's no short of, obviously, talent, but also motivation, because they know the formula works. If we just keep giving the feedback, then we can get the bikes better and better. We win even more, so we give more feedback.
Yeah.
Are you guys in a lot of communication with the team, or is it just kind of chatting through?
I think we talk quite a lot with them. I mean, Nige is very much involved. He'll come over to the office quite a bit and be a good link between the team. And I'll go to a few races and chat to the guys and get some feedback of what, how it's all working between them, and just get some direct feedback to pass on to Dale.
Yeah.
And then there's things like what we'll have in the next month or so, where we'll try and get all our athletes together and talk through next year's bikes and next year's models and get people testing bikes, just to make people feel part of the brand, as well as take in their opinion. Because at the end of the day, as much as you don't want loads and loads of opinions, but these are really like a lot of good riders, people coming to tell you this works, this doesn't work, or this could be better. We'd be stupid not to take that on board.
Yeah. When you are taking that on board, how far, for the uninitiated, myself included, does the bike industry work in advance in actuality? I mean, we're working on like 2035 now or something? Or
well, I'm sure the sort of big component brands like SRAM are probably working 5 or 6 yeah. years ahead. They must be. But we only hear... Depends what it is. If they've come up with new standards, and maybe give us maybe 2 years' notice. Mm. If it's a new product, we'll get at least a full year's notice. But yeah, they must be working 5 or 6 years ahead. Mm. Like we'll always work. We work 2 years ahead, pretty much.
Because I sometimes find myself, how to put it, viewing with scepticism things that are too reactionary. Mm-hmm. You know, the. If a company came up with a mullet bike next year, or even like, you know, now sort of thing, mm-hmm. or plans, I think that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. But when mullet bikes kind of almost seem to happen overnight, when mm-hmm. Rotorua and Loic won, and then yeah. at the first World Cup, people are like, oh, we've got mullet bikes now, they're bloody brilliant, check this out. It seemed a bit too good to be true. And I'm always very suspicious of a golden ticket. Mm-hmm. If something says, this is going to solve all your problems, wowee, you know, line mm-hmm. them up and knock them down. I'm always quite like, that sounds a bit too good to be true. Mm. Do you find yourself kind of reacting to the market, or are you just saying, actually, we're going to do our own thing, we've got a good formula, we've got a good process, and you kind of trust the process? Or do you think, actually, there's probably a, you know, from the business side of things, I'm sure you're thinking, there's a bloody quick buck to be made here. If we just get, just swap the wheels around, guys, it doesn't matter, get them swapped.
I think it's like Dale, I mean, you've got to look at these things, but I think, as Dale said before, we kind of have to try it ourselves.
Yes.
So whether it's the guys in house trying it and testing, or
it's like, I'm sure it's dead easy to go, this is hot, this is the next one. Yeah. Let's get on the bus. But we'll try it, and there's been a few sort of trends, or I'd say now fads in the past, where we've been told, oh, should get on this, and we've tried it, and went, this is pants. If we don't think this is a good thing, then it's not going to happen. Like, it's not. And yeah, there's been a few things in the past that we just, now let's just sit back and see what happens, and then we made the right decision just to wait it out and see. Mall is the same thing. Like, we don't even know, like, all these guys, like, have they just squeezed a 29 inch wheel into a, you know, 27.5 fork with no tire clearance? Have they just jacked the front up? Have they reduced the travel of the fork? You know, have they? There's loads of compromises, or have they just got a special CNC'd, you know, back end made? Yep. You know, so, but we need to think of the sort of longer term, if it's, first of all, if it's a benefit to the riders, or, you know, technical gains, you know, is it a good thing or not? And then even think about, is there an easy way of doing it? You know, so it's just a, like, spec change. Can we just, you know, 27.5 rear end on 29 inch front end, then it's just a matter of changing the part number. You know,
because when, you know, last week we were doing a podcast about freeride, and they were saying they were learning tricks, not even that they knew they had to do to be competitive, but they were trying to guess the tricks that everyone else was learning for next year.
Yeah.
So it was very hard for them to place themselves. When you see a big company like Giant, who are obviously huge, and they bring up that new rain, which is actually quite, like, the reach numbers on it are huge. I think it's like 490 for a large. That's quite, and that's that bike is probably going to sit within their cycle for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So then suddenly you think, well, this is kind of how I think. So I think, well, in 2023, there are going to be a lot of bikes like that, because there'll be a reaction, you know, and it will all kind of bubble up and feed off each other. Are you designing the bikes the market demands now and trying to sell them, or are you trying to think, we need to be one step ahead, where is this market going? Is there any kind of sort of pieces of data that you kind of really look at and metrics, and you think this is a good indication of what will happen?
Yeah, it's just following with the latest bikes coming out, really, and seeing. Yeah, but at the same time, we have to be comfortable in our, like, you know, the reach numbers before, like, for medium, you know, or a large. You know, if we start, you know, put a large rider on a certain reach, and they're saying, yeah, we're happy with that, don't really want any more. So you need to consider that, but then you need to have a look at new bikes coming on the market, and they do tend to be getting bigger, but not drastically. Maybe the rain is pushing it a bit.
I think it's learning why people are doing it as well, because humans haven't really changed size.
Like, well, talk to yourself, mate, in the last 6 months.
But they're not like, there's still people the same size that they were that should be looking at the same size.
Yes.
But it's whether certain people are telling them they should be having a bigger bike or a smaller bike or this. And it's looking to why they're doing that.
Mm.
And like what we've said about previously on about whether you make something slightly slacker, slightly longer, slightly steeper seat angles, which affects the reach figures, but then actually doesn't physically alter the reach figures.
Yes. Well, I think that's
so like, sort of, I don't know, Sam's always on a 435 bike, and then he's just jumped onto a Mega 29, which we were a little bit worried about the sizing being a little bit different, but because the seat angle's slightly steeper and some certain elements have changed, the physical distance between him and his bars hasn't changed that much.
Mm.
So, but it's just a matter of making sure that we're not just following a fad to make a longest bike to...
And how does it feel being someone that is responsible for the marketing of and heading up many aspects, I'm sure, of Nukeproof, mm-hmm. not solely that, but when there's kind of this attitude within the consumer, you know, mm-hmm. of the boogeyman, mm-hmm. the boogeyman, Mr. Marketeer, mm-hmm. you know, like kind of, oh, well, they all want us to ride 29ers. Mm. Well, actually, I'm sure you actually don't really, you just want a good bike to be a good bike. How do you kind of feel about that sort of attitude? Do you think it's kind of...
There's enough bike brands out there for everyone to
yeah.
find what they want.
Yes.
I mean, I think I've been really, really lucky, like, to be honest, in the past couple of years, whether we've had the perfect storm of, like, when we had the 27.5 bike first coming out as a carbon bike, Sam performing really well on it and going and winning the championship on that. That helped launch that bike.
Yes.
And then...
Funnily enough, he's now on a 29.
Funny enough, making the decision at the start of this year.
What was I saying about not believing in coincidence?
But I mean that, like literally, I think when he moved on to it in Madeira, and then we were launching like a limited edition one the week, everyone's like, oh, that's why he's gone on the bike.
Yes.
And it's like, literally, you're not going to be able to tell that guy what to do.
That's
he's got to decide. Yeah. He decided after the first two that holes are getting bigger, he needs to move on to a wheel size that fitted.
I remember speaking to Sam about, because I heard kind of rumours that he was doing these 130, 140k trail rides.
Mm.
I was like, are you really riding 140k on your enduro bike? He was like, yep. I was like, okay. I mean, he said it with so much certainty, I felt foolish to ask. And I was like, I mean, good, but what's the motivation behind that? And he was just like, well, say this race is going to be really brutal. Finale's, you know, saying 60k or whatever. But if racing 60k is difficult... If I raise 130, if I go train 130k, then 60k doesn't seem so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like a no-nonsense approach. And I can imagine, the difficulty of trying to wrestle him on a bike that he didn't want to be on.
Oh.
It's not going to happen, is it?
You're not. That's the same with all our athletes. We won't tell them what bike they've got to be on the best tool for the job. Because, again, racing is generally mental rather than physical for them because they're all really, really fit athletes. So they've just got to find the best tool for their job and try that. So there's no point telling them what to do. I can make a nice glossy story about whatever they're on and do
totally.
And try and make the best of what they are doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just been, we've been very fortunate. It's been that perfect storm this year.
Yeah. And I think, fortunate is probably the right word. You know, you also have good personnel anyway, but like Elliot, just choosing to race four cross and obviously doing it to an incredibly high level on his mega. It must just be quite sort of, it's nice that it comes back, you know, like you're supporting these guys with sponsorship, etc., but they're not just like, oh yeah, I only want to do this. They're like, okay, cool, I want to go do this. And you've got, they're quite an outgoing group.
I think
Sam races cross country and all this, you know, it's
because of, I mean, the general fundamental of the whole athletes. I mean, we'll get a lot of inquiries of a lot of people that want sponsorship as such, but at the end of the day, our athletes generally just love bikes.
Yeah,
like Elliot loves being on his bike. He's probably one of the most talented guys I've ever seen on a bike naturally.
Yeah.
Because he loves his bike time. He'd go out and play even if he wasn't sponsored. Same with Keelan, loves riding his bike. Same with all our youths that we have riding the bike. Generally, they're just stoked to be on the bike. And that's fundamentally the most important thing about what we want is, I don't know, to inspire anyone to want to buy your bike. Or you don't want someone that's just there to ride the bike as fast as they can on Sunday. It's really good to go and see them at a trail centre loving riding their bike and doing what they do for free anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just so happens they're some of the best athletes in the world.
I, riding with Elliot and Keelan in New Zealand, in Queenstown. And Elliot, I mean, obviously, you know, they're both riding incredibly hard, but the bike handling skills, both of them. Elliot in a car park, on clipless pedals, doing God, like proper trial stuff on a 160mm, 170mm bike, whilst talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, like all this. And you're just like, I remember a couple of years ago, it was at the top of Fort William, and Elliot was racing the downhill.
Yep.
Him and Win Masters got into a game of bike on downhill bikes. Like, bunny hopping a downhill bike onto a proper high ledge, like, you know, wheeling up onto it, then manualing up. Just incredible to watch. There was that video of him on the cyclocross bike.
Yeah.
And, you know, must be such a, like, such an asset, not to be, like, have to shoehorn him into stuff, but just have somebody that, like I said, is outgoing and being like, yeah, let's make a cool cyclocross video. I'm going to eat some pies. Ah! You know?
I think it just comes down to the fact he's really good at what he does.
Yes.
And he loves what he does. And that's what makes my job a lot easier when you've got these guys. And when that's what we try and do with our sponsorship, is surround ourselves with guys that want to do what they do. And so when you do go, can you come and do a video shoot? Which sounds brilliant to a lot of people, but it's a long day and it's really hard pushing back up to do the same shoot again and again. Having someone on site that's just like, I can do that better. I want to do that. Let's try this. Let's do that. And so that's, it's so good having these boys on. It's so much of an asset that we've got. And I think hopefully that comes across to the end customer, that they see our guys and, you know what, these bikes look fun. As well as race well and win races, whatever. And it's just, it's fun having those guys on. And when you get to meet them in the pits at a race or go and get an autograph with them, they're generally bubbly guys and nice to meet, see. They've got time for you.
Yeah, totally.
So they're really good ambassadors for us as a brand.
I've got to say they're both, obviously only did a bit of wrenching for them, but they're both pleasure to wrench for. Like, you couldn't ask for two nicer guys to work on their bikes. Like, so almost to accommodate. We want like that. Like, well, I can put it anywhere you want, whichever way it is. Yeah, but if you tell me what you want, I'll do it that way. Yeah, whichever way it comes. It's not anywhere yet. What do you want? Oh, okay. If it's like that, you know.
Yeah.
And speaking of kind of passion and enjoyment, how satisfying is it for you to go from the concept of a bike to however long down the line, seeing it kind of roll off the factory? Is it? Yeah. It must be a pretty special thing.
Yeah, that's the most. Probably the most exciting part, like the recent release of the reactors.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, two wheel sizes, aluminium and carbon, it's just, for us, it's been dragging on for a long time. So we're kind of like, oh, just these bikes. Like, so, you know, just because we've been looking at them for a long time, trying to get everyone to come out together on time and all that stuff. But actually seeing the final painted samples going through photography, and then hitting the internet, it's just like, wow. And then we actually see painted bikes in proper colours, not just, you know, raw aluminium or, you know, the raw carbon finish. So it's just enthusiasm just like spikes then, really. And then the next step will be starting to see, you know, customers riding these bikes.
Quite a busy year with the Descent, the 29er carbon, Mega with the revised kind of kinematics, etc.
Yeah.
And also the reactor. I bet it was, you know, all to the wall at some points.
Oh yeah, there's been lots of ups and downs, trying to get everything move smoothly along. And but
I imagine you're pretty tight-lipped on what you'd be working on come Monday morning.
we're even busier.
I think it's credit to Dale and his team and the guys in the office that we haven't got the biggest team in the world, and that's where certain things do take us a long time to maybe react, and that's what we have to get right, because of there's a small group of people basically compared to a lot of bike brands out there, as Nukeproof as a brand isn't huge, but the guys, when they try and do it, they try and get it right,
because
they're not just doing bikes, they're doing components, and now we're doing a bit of clothing as well, so there's we bite off of far too much.
I was gonna say, you've got
very busy.
So it's the same. Dale's doing bikes, and then maybe working on a pedal, and then maybe working on something else. And so it keeps you motivated.
Yes.
And it's good to see. So I think, it's good. It's good to see that people like the work that this guy's put in, basically. I think.
Yeah, that's good. Seeing customers even just at the weekend, you know, round passing one of your bikes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must be really surreal.
It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And then you'd see one, you'd see bikes going past and they're not quite set up right, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
You just want to run over and fix it for them. But
yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally.
But sometimes you just have to stand back and go, look, it's fine, just fine.
Yeah. Well,
you're running 40% slack, come back.
Yeah, totally, yeah. I find myself doing that sometimes, like, because of this show, sometimes I'm recognised at the trails, and people will say, oh, you know, if often people are super nice anyway, and they're like, oh, can you, do you know how to fix this? And then, like, they'll say something quite minor, and then I'll notice something actually perhaps like a safety issue. And I'm like, I've got my toolbox in the van, let's get to the car park. And then we're there, and this one time, me and this guy, who was absolutely lovely, it has to be said, we spent quite a while working on this bike, okay, but we got it like absolutely, he was in his GMBN t-shirt, proud as punch, and it was super cool, man. It was like real, like, nice to see that, you know, right for your eyes to behold.
Yeah,
I think it's always good, like, okay, the online thing now allows us to communicate directly with some customers, and you see like some of the Facebook forums and owners clubs and things like that, and just to see the passion that people now have for the brand, and it's brilliant. Like I say, it's a real credit to what the guys have been creating that over the past few years. There's so much passion now for the brand, and it's kind of like, it's wow.
Must be pretty humbling, like, look what we've done.
Wow,
fantastic. Well, with that, I think we'll leave it on that lovely note. Thank you very much for coming on, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know a bit more about yourselves and the brand. As always, guys, you can listen to this on your streaming service of choice, be it Spotify or what have you. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you next time.